Before I get started with today's podcast, I wanted to give a big shout out to Jeannie Colwin Coaching. Jeannie Colwin is a stress and mind-body coach based out of Los Angeles, and you might remember that she guest hosted the podcast back in January, also came on live with me in August of 2021, and of course she was here just a couple of months ago for episode 238 called Stress Talk. Jeannie spent 16 years battling fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, and a myriad of other chronic symptoms that left her physically and mentally exhausted. She healed herself completely, and now she's obsessed with getting her clients fast results through her one-on-one coaching program. In her program, clients learn how to decrease stress, release stuck negative emotions, and finally heal their chronic pain. Are you feeling stuck in your journey? Are you frustrated because you're familiar with TMS concepts but haven't seen much improvement? Are you sick of everyone talking about feeling their emotions because you don't know how to do it? Perhaps you're now realizing that you can't keep doing this on your own. Jeannie offers free 45-minute consults where you'll identify what's holding you back so you can take your next steps for healing. Go to her website, that's jeanniecolwin.com, JeannieKulwin.com, and book your free call to see if it's a good fit. Welcome back to the podcast. It is Wednesday, October the 26th. I am your host, Eddie Lindenstein. Before I get started, wanted to make sure I give a shout out to the patrons of the podcast. Go to patreon.com/ the Mind and Fitness Podcast if you want to help support this show, help keep it on the air for free, keep the lights on, throw a few bucks in the tip jar, whatever we'd like to say. Let me give a shout out to Barb and Arnie and Brian, Julie, Ross, Christina, Mike, Michael, Tony, Kelly, Irina, Mindy, Jason, John, James, Sylvie, Sasha, Dominic, Enda, Elise, Amanda, Paul, Emily, Kirk, and Daniel. Thank you all so much for continuing to support the show. Again, go to patreon.com/ the Mind and Fitness Podcast to learn more. Okay, so last week on the podcast, I gave a call to action. I asked, hey, if you're out there and you're aware of these concepts, you've had improvement, but you feel a little stuck for whatever the reason is or whatever the case may be, hit me up. Let's do an episode. Let's talk. And so this is episode one of that. And there's going to be an episode two coming up in a few weeks or a couple weeks. Maybe we'll see. I'm interviewing the person next week, so we'll see how it goes. But I bring you Trish's story. And Trish and I got connected on Instagram many months ago. Her and I kind of have similar interests. And it's pretty cool to sort of hear her story. And, you know, this show has always been about the perspective of the people that have gone through and gotten out the other side. And then they have this confidence about it. Well, I talked to Trish and she's sort of hit this stumbling block. So we talk a lot about her past. And again, I'm giving a big disclaimer that I'm not a therapist. I'm not a psychotherapist. I barely even play one on a podcast. And so we're just chatting. It's you're observing two people at the bar, as I always say. So without further ado, here's Trish and I. I think you're going to like this. Welcome back to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. I am your host, Eddie Lindenstein, as always. And this week is different. I say that a lot, but this week is truly different. If you were listening last week, I put out a call to action. I had said, hey, if there's anybody out there that has made some progress in getting rid of their pain or their symptoms, and they're familiar with the TMS concepts and the Sarno work and kind of all the stuff that gets rolled into that, but you just feel stuck, reach out to me. And I did get some responses, and you'll hear a couple of those interviews in the coming weeks, but I have one of those with me. Trish from Middle America, Midwest, USA is on the line with me. Trish, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Hello.
Okay. Hello. So let me give out a disclaimer first. I want everybody to know absolutely without a shadow of a doubt that I am not a therapist. I'm not a licensed psychotherapist. All that I can provide to Trish is expertise by proxy of doing this podcast and studying this work for now crazy over half a decade. So I just want to make sure I have that disclaimer for you and for anybody that's listening. So Trish, first, maybe just tell us a little bit about yourself, if you're comfortable with your age and, you know, just kind of your role in the world and you as a person, like not TMS or symptom related, but, you know, interests and you as a person and where you grew up and that kind of stuff.
Sure, absolutely. So my name is Trish. I am from the Midwest, like Eddie said, and I am a wife and a mother of four. My children are 13, 9, 5, and 2. I run an auto repair shop that I own with my husband. He's our main mechanic. I do all of our books. I also trying to get into the YouTube thing, doing videos about like motorcycle maintenance and repairs. I rent along with my husband on some things. And I'm super outdoorsy. I love to hunt. I love to fish. That's pretty much me in a nutshell. I grew up in a family of 8 children. I'm number 7. My parents were homesteaders, and so I grew up very poor. But a lot of cool things came out of my childhood from that experience. And so I love everything like the old way. I love growing a lot of my own food, canning. I love baking and cooking, and I'm into fitness. I work out. I lift probably 6 days a week, if not 7.
Oh, wow. So. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Did you say, I can't remember, did you say your age? I didn't hear it in there.
Oh, I'm 31. Okay. And I also am a firefighter. I'm a volunteer firefighter with my community.
So just so I'm clear, business owner, 31, yep. 4 kids, firefighter, work out 6 or 7 days a week. So you got a lot. You do a lot. You're busy.
I got a lot.
And you'd mentioned a avid motorcyclist. I think that might be how we got connected on social media. Actually, might have been that, but it could have also been the podcast. So it's nice to have a fellow motorcyclist. Yeah. When my symptoms really ramped up, like, it impacted the thing that I love the most, which is riding my motorcycle all over the place. So, So, talk to me about, like, how long ago did symptoms begin for you? Like bad ones, like they were changing your quality of life and that kind of thing.
Oh my goodness. Well, like many people, when we learn about TMS and the ins and outs of it, we learn that we have suffered probably our whole lives. And so there have always been things, there have always been, like, you know, very common ones like digestive problems, just very hypersensitive to every sensation in my body, very anxious person. Probably why I'm so busy and enjoy fitness so much is because it just allows me to burn off all that energy. The one that really got me was, so just kind of, would you like a little backstory?
Yes,
on
yes,
what kind
please.
Of led up to it?
Yeah.
Sure. So growing up, like I said, I'm 1 of 8. I come from a home where my father was incredibly abusive. He was physically and emotionally abusive to all of us children, but especially my mom. I witnessed a lot of him beating her, essentially. I don't know a nicer way to put it, because that's just what it was. He had what I now know is borderline personality disorder. And so I was constantly trying to, this is where my people pleasing kind of took root. I was always trying to change, you know, his state of mind, or I guess how he was feeling with, you know, if he comes home and he's angry, what can I do to help that? How can I make that go away? Cause I don't want to see mom get hurt, and I don't want to see any of the kids get hurt. And so my parents ultimately ended up getting divorced when I was in 6th grade, and I was ping ponged between both households. I grew up, I got pregnant with my oldest son at 19. It was pretty crazy. We grew up together. He's like my best friend. He is going to be 14 now in March. Awesome kid. And then I was married to, my ex-husband we were together for 7 years. We ended up ultimately getting divorced. He's still a great guy, still takes care of our children that we have together. We get along great. And then I met my current husband now, and we have our 2 children together. All of my children live with me. When the pandemic started, there was a lot of just ugliness going on in the world, and politically, one way or another, everybody could have seen it. I mean, you don't have to be on one side of the fence or another. I always was curious about homeschooling my children, and, I thought, hey, what better time to do that than now? And I decided to start homeschooling my children. I was also pregnant with my fourth baby at the time. And so navigating the world through that time for any person was a lot, especially us parents. Especially, you know, we didn't know how to act or how to be, but more so we had to keep our children feeling safe and, you know, feeling good and confident. And we really weren't feeling safe. And I would say, you know, for most everybody. Yeah. And I ultimately ended up having a home birth with my baby, my now 2-year-old. And I was just a lover of all things natural and holistic. And I was super into like chiropractic care, which I can't believe now. It makes me cringe on the amount of money I wasted on. After my baby was born, my fourth, now we're talking, it was a turbulent experience postpartum. He was jaundiced. No one caught that. It ultimately led to him not nursing very well. He lost quite a bit of weight. He was not latching on properly. We spent all this money on getting a lip and tongue tie revised and cranial sacral therapy and all this other stuff. And I spent that first year of his life with recurrent mastitis again and again and again. And for those that do not know what mastitis feels like, it feels like you have the flu. Like, yeah. I had COVID and mastitis worse. Wow. Your body just feels terrible.
Yeah.
And so I was constantly pouring into my family and trying to be the best mom I could be and trying to fit in with all these homeschoolers because those were the moms I looked up to. You know, I don't come from a line of homeschoolers, anything like that. But you have women who their kids are, oh, we learned Latin this week. And it's like, what? Like, I'm trying to teach my kids not to be like those people. Like, what? What are we talking about?
Yeah.
So I was feeling very inadequate. But so throughout that year of constantly being sick on and off with mastitis, I think the straw that finally broke the camel's back, we all had hand, foot, and mouth this last February, and I had like a residual headache that was coming from it. So I talked to my friend who is a massage therapist and like, hey, I have these headaches. Can you, you know, help me out? And, you know, she gave me a deep tissue massage. And later on that night, I noticed I had a funny taste in my mouth. And I'm like, what is this? And it just kept on. And then I started getting like little electric jolt feeling in my teeth. And I went to my dentist, you know, did all the things and that you would normally do just to get checked out. He's like, no, you're fine. Like, your teeth look good. And then I could not stand this weird taste in my mouth. Like, it felt like I was like eating pennies or something. Yeah. And then all of a sudden I wake up one morning and it's worse. And then later on that day, I'm eating lunch, nothing out of the ordinary. And my mouth just starts burning like crazy. And it scared me so bad that, I started crying. I'm like talking to my husband. I'm like, I don't know what's going on. Like, I think I'm all having an allergic reaction. So over the course of that next month, we went to every single doctor, chiropractor, holistic nutritionalist, holistic therapist, ear, nose, and throat specialist. Yeah. Who else could be sick? A hematologist. Like, I had just a ridiculous amount of blood drawn from me and an MRI and all these things, only to find out I just get told, well, you have something called burning mouth syndrome. We don't know what this is. We don't know how to fix it. Usually it'll self-resolve within 6 months, but it could be up to 15 years. And I'm sitting here like, 15 years? Like, what? So I was freaking out even worse. And this was
just a few months ago, right? We're in 2022 right now.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. So we had the hand, foot, and mouth, which I think that was the thing that may have set me over the edge because I was just so stressed out and sick all the time from this mastitis and, you know, just all this stuff building up on me. And I think that's where it attached itself to perhaps. But, so this was, just this last February and, I am not one to take any sort of medication. I don't even take, I mean, I had all four of my children naturally. I did not, you know, I don't even take ibuprofen for headaches usually. No shame to anybody that does, but that's just not my preference. And, I tried medications that they gave me. And of course, like, you know, the drill, the first day they make you feel super weird. Then I'm like, screw this. I'm not taking this anymore. Absolutely not. So I don't take any medication. patient. I'm thankful that I didn't. Out of desperation, I went on my Spotify and searched Burning Mouth because I'm like, somebody's got to know about this. And somebody, you know, I came across the podcast with Nicole Sachs and like the real time healer she did. And I'm like, oh my God, like this is what's happening to me. And like, this is a real thing. So that started a deep dive into, you know, Sarno. And, but meanwhile, I'm still just this absolute nervous wreck. Like I'd walk around like shaking like a leaf, you know, all day. Cause I'm just like, I can't calm down. I'm freaking out. Like you put your hand on a hot stove. Like there's a reason you pull it back, you know, it's burning. It hurt. And so that is where I finally reached out to a TMS therapist, Jim Prusak, who is probably one of the most wonderful human beings on this entire planet.
I agree.
He is amazing, amazing, amazing. And, I had also seen, Dr. Strack. And he actually put me in contact with another patient of his that, she's amazing. We have so much in common and we've become such good friends and she has the same thing as me. So we have been encouraging each other and talking. So shout out. Hey girl, I know you're listening. I'm not going to say her name, but she's a big fan too.
Oh, good.
But she lives in Orange County, California, and I'm here in the Midwest and like our lives just are so similar, but so different. So cool. So this is where we stand, Eddie. I am feeling better. However, I do not feel like I'm in this rut of like, is this ever going to go away? Because I know what made me angry. I know I've been able to tap into these emotions. The journal speak thing did not work well for me because I am very self-aware. I know, you know, kind of the beast I'm up against as far as my emotions and how I feel. So it felt like I was really rehashing a lot of that trauma again and again. And it didn't make me feel very good. So here is where we are. I am fully functional. Like you'd never be able to tell that I have this going on. Very few select people know. But I'm frustrated and I'm just like, I get it. You know, I get it, but why can I not make this go away?
What's kind of the take of your family, particularly your oldest son, and your husband, like as this stuff over the last couple of years, because it sounds like this is relatively new, just like in the last couple. I know you said that you kind of did the deep dive and you looked back several years and you've had symptoms for a long time, just like most of us have. But, you know, the thing where, hey, it's interrupting my life, even if I am fully functional, but it's kind of always there. I know that it's there. Just within the last couple of years. So what's been like the reception from your husband and then your oldest son?
So I love that you're asking about them because I wanted to bring them up. So my husband is everything that I feel like should embody a father and a husband and a partner. Like he is so incredibly kind and understanding and has been there. It's just like makes me choke up a little cause he's just so great. But he has been on board with like this TMS thing, 100%. And he knows that I took on too much, but I am very strong willed and they're like, I am a force to be reckoned with. Like if I get something in my head, I'm going to do it. Like you're damn right. I am going to do it.
Yeah.
And so he's incredibly supportive that like, he even understands TMS now. And he is not like, when I hear you speak about your wife, he seems similar to that, like he is not a TMSer as she is not, which is great because it helps to balance out a relationship.
Yeah.
But he just thinks it's a lot of stress. And when you talk about my oldest child, like that's my boy, like that's my homie. That is like one of my best friends.
Yeah.
And he, when this all started, I sat down, his name is Banu. I named him after the Egyptian phoenix. And I said, Banu, what do you think is going on with mama? And he looked at me and he just held my hand and he goes, Mom, you are so stressed.
Oh.
Sorry. I never cry. I don't know why I'm getting so emotional. He's like, Mom, you are so stressed. And that's the only reason why you're sick. He's like, do you understand that? And like, this is coming from a 13-year-old. And he is so like wise beyond his years. And, he's just like the coolest kid. Like I had a very crappy, like you, I, like I said, I did not have money. growing up, and high school was not a good experience for me. I was a poor kid, so I got made fun of a lot. I was like overweight, like not overweight, overweight, I guess maybe overweight in like other standards, but like in the Midwest, like girls tend to be a little thicker. But I got teased a lot, and I actually developed an eating disorder in my 20s. And it wasn't like anorexia or bulimia. It was like orthorexia, I think, is what I hate grouping everything into a term, but it's PMS essentially. I got just super obsessed with like working out and eating clean. Like my son, my oldest son, he is like living the dream. You know, my kids went back to public school this year, and that was one of the huge decisions that I made. Like, we live in a really small town. It's a great school. He's like everybody's friend. He's like one of those kids that are popular, not because they're just like a huge jock and really good looking. Like, he is just everybody's friend. Yeah. Like, a kid with autism started at their school this year, and we're just kind of like talking about school yesterday around the dinner table. And he's like, I'm like, oh, how was school today, Benu? And he's like, you know, a new girl came to school today, so I made a new friend, and you know, whatever. I'm like, oh, cool. He's like, yeah, well, she's autistic, and no one was sitting by her. He's like, I felt terrible, so I went and introduced myself, and I ate lunch with her, and you know, told her if she ever needed to eat lunch with anybody else or wanted to hang out, like, I'm here. And I'm like, how are you so cool? Like, you're 13.
Yeah,
13-year-olds are supposed to suck.
he reminds me a lot. I've talked about my oldest Zoe, and she's only 8, but so she's in third grade, and she told us like an eerily similar story to what you're saying around the dinner table last night. But it was about a new girl that started at her school that doesn't speak any English. She speaks Spanish, and she mm-hmm. was sitting by herself, and Zoe went and sat with her for lunch. And played and interacted and that kind of stuff. Like, there was nobody around, so Zoe kind of took that on herself. You know, one of the things that I'm thinking of too is you talked about this like high school experience for you, and to me, and a lot of the theme of this call and sort of where I think you could really benefit is, and just people in general, by the way, that are struggling with kind of these lingering symptoms. A lot of it, I think, is just around awareness of not just certain things within you, but certain things that are going around. The thing that jumps out to me as you're describing your teen experience, and the thing that came to mind right away was how you had mentioned earlier in the call that your oldest son, who you're very close with, is 13. And to mm-hmm. me, what that would jump out to me is that there might be a part of you that almost has this kind of uneasy anticipation somewhere that's looming a little bit, that it's kind of maybe bringing up some memories for you that, like, you know, because as kids, we kind of all think that we're pretty cool, like by the like preteen years. And then mm-hmm. you get to the teen years, and then the experience is not at all what you would expect it to be. And so mm-hmm. to me, I think maybe part of the building anxiety could be around that you had this really shitty experience as a teenager, and this son of yours who you're so close with is he's in that stage. He's about to go through that period of his life, and part of you could be internalizing that a little bit. That was the first thing sure. that I thought about when you were talking about your teen years.
Sure.
So that's one thing that I would think about. I want to go back to, you also had said, I can't remember the exact word that you said, but I wrote down that you had felt like kind of worked through, you talked about tried the journal speak, didn't really work for you. Talked about it was either feeling emotions or being aware of them. Can you just go into a little bit more detail on that?
Sure. So it's really interesting. Like, when this all started, it just feels like this huge, like, it was the perfect storm of stuff to happen. Yeah. And so I know, you know, why I have this now, but it's just like a multifaceted issue. I learned about Louise Hay before I even learned about TMS, before this even happened. And this was probably right around February too. And I wanted to go and do like the forgiveness of our, like the inner child meditation she has, where we forgive the people that have hurt us. And I was forgiving my dad. And I don't know, you know, it's like that probably played a factor into it. But so like feeling my emotions, like Jim taught me, like he taught me to, you know, like anger feels like a burning, like a hot, like mm-hmm. mad, you know, or like anxiety feels like a prickly, like a tingly. So putting a name to the physical feeling that I'm feeling is pretty much like how I process my emotion, or how I do that, I guess. And he's taken me through some exercises to like get anger out. I guess if you know Jim and his style, you know what I'm talking about. And so there's been that. I just feel like I don't feel necessarily angry about anything anymore. Like, I don't know, like if I have a day where something is just really pissing me off, like instead of being reserved, like I would have been before, I'll just go ahead and say it, like, you're being, you know, whatever, like we need to sit down and talk about this. Or, you know, if I feel like something needs to be said, I say it. So I guess that's how I kind of process my emotions. I guess something I would also note is when I was 16, I ended up getting pregnant in high school and got an abortion. That was a really tough thing to kind of dig up and work through. And I know that that's kind of like a big contributing factor why I feel like I need to be a perfect parent, because I don't necessarily feel like that is something that if I could go back, I would have done again. And it's kind of such a hot button right now in like the news and the media. And so like there's that going against it. And then there's like also the issue of, you know, we don't want to be like our parents if you feel like they contributed in any way to our pain. So like, I feel like, you know, you have all these, like, this generational trauma that keeps repeating itself. Like, I'm the one that's breaking that, and it is so hard. You know, so.
Well, it certainly is a burden. I'm curious on the, basically, because I know, I think I know what you're talking about when you say that you're trying to not do the things that your parents did. And I think I have an idea. Can you just give me maybe an example?
Sure. Like just snapping at my children or like yelling at them or just displaying such unhealthy behavior. My dad was also a really big alcoholic. Also, so it was like two heavily contrasted parents. Like you had my dad on one side that was just, you know, all fire and ice. And then you had my mom on the other side who was so kind and gentle and yeah. It's okay. You know, like I'll give you anything you want if it makes you happy. Like that's, I'm still close with my mom and that's just the type of person she is. She always just is just living to make everybody else happy. So I know there's definitely a lot of my personality in that. But I'm really trying to teach my children that other people's happiness is not dependent on them.
Have you, you know, you had talked about like, well, so there's a couple things. A, I want to, and I would ask you to be honest, but obviously it's totally up to you to not be honest here. But you had said mm-hmm. like trying to basically be the antithesis of your dad, pretty much a hothead or even snapping or responding in that way. But have you done it or do you do it on a regular basis?
Behave like him, you mean?
Yeah. Even like little outburst. Like we, you know, we kind of all take things from our parents and some people don't, mm-hmm. but most people do. Like, does that happen?
No.
No. Okay.
And it's weird because like sometimes I feel that inside, like I can understand like where that rage came from him, I guess. Like, but like a lot of this experience this last 6 months has also taught me a lot about like how I parent and like I do not need to be this perfect mother for my children to grow up to be good people. Like I've never been one to rage out at my kids. I really bite my tongue. Like I don't swear at them, obviously, like, you know, was done to me all the time. But I try to be firm with them. But at the same time, I like to validate their feelings. Like if my 5-year-old daughter, like she's being super annoying and just whining and whining and whining for a snack or something, I'm like, no, you know, supper's coming up. We don't need a snack. She'll like throw a fit and I'll just be like, you know what? I understand that you are upset right now. And I know it can be frustrating when we don't get what we want, but you know, I need you to just wait until supper. You know, I'm that kind of parent, where I am more so on the gentler side of things.
Yeah.
And so that's really different territory for me because that's not how I grew up. It was from my mom, but my dad overpowered everything she did anyway. So any sort of gentle parenting she was doing was like, you know, behind his back or when he was not.
When you say that you have a moment like what you're describing where your kids do something that's misbehaving or annoying or whatever the case is, and you don't have a snap reaction or you don't curse at them or whatever, I'd be curious to know, because that energy is going somewhere. It's going somewhere. So if it's not going out, then it's going in. So what do you do to then process that? Because you're human. So if there's something that your daughter does or your boys do or whatever, and it makes you really upset or really angry, you withhold and you don't push that energy towards them. Is there anything, I know you had mentioned, you know, going to the gym and doing that kind of stuff, but, you know, a lot of times, like, what that is, and it's knocking on your shoulders, is it saying, like, hey, Trish, like, we need to be felt. And so a lot of times that's like the perfect moment to somatically feel it. And it's tough if you're in the moment and you sort of back away and you don't say anything to them, and then you go along with your business or whatever it is that you're doing. And then, you know, an hour later, and becomes 6 hours later, and becomes the next day, and you just kind of forget about it. That energy is still really there in your nervous system. You haven't done anything to get rid of it. And like, what I would encourage you to do is, in those moments, if you can stop and take even something like 5 or 10 or 30 seconds or whatever, just to kind of close your eyes and kind of go inward and just try and find a sensation, any sensation in your body, could even be the burning mouth. But just sit there and observe it, like, be a watcher. Cause I think, like, one kid is enough. You've got way more than one kid. So,
yes, I do.
So, like, you've got an awful lot going on. And I always think of how much stress can the nervous system really withstand. And there's all different types of stress, but I don't think they can be compartmentalized for most people. So you have this physical stress of, you know, kind of beating your body up and doing the weights and stuff like that 6 or 7 days a week. And I do Olympic style weightlifting and kick my own ass several days a week. But then you also have the stress of these kids. And I think that you may be carrying a little bit of guilt about, you know, they were homeschooled and that was something you were going to take on, and you admired these women that you've been following that do it. And then you sent them back to public school, and that was a huge decision. I think maybe part of that is coming into effect, especially, you know, just in the last couple of months, like, this, the burning mouth thing has really ramped up. Do you think that that's possible?
Possibly. So, sending them back to school was a decision that I had made, like, after I had been dealing with this mouth burning thing. So I homeschooled them for years, and then decided in June when we were on summer that I was going to send them back. So I'm like, yeah, I'm taking on too much. But, like, I guess I feel like I've made a lot of really good decisions and positive changes in my life regarding the TMS.
Yeah.
Or, like, you know, if my kids are acting up, I'll, like, go in my room and, you know, I will raise my voice at them, and be firm with them if it just gets out of line. But I'll go to my husband, or, like, you know, we'll go in our room after the situation's over, and I'll just, like, joke to my husband. I'll be like, you want to sell a kid today? Or, you know, it'll be stuff like that. And, like, that's kind of how we diffuse it a little bit, you know, like, we can, like, be that way with each other, and, like, we support each other. Like, we're very in tune. Like, if one or the other sees the other getting upset, we step in and say, you know, well, you go take a break and let me handle this.
Yeah.
Like a, you know, teamwork. But I guess where I feel like I'm the most stuck is, like, why does it stick around? You know, like, why, like, some say, you got to do this work and you got to do all the work. And then others say, like, no, you can't pay any attention to it. You can't be doing this work. Like, I feel like it's all rooted kind of in the same thing, of course, PMS. However, the lines become very blurred for some people, because this is not a bad ankle or back I'm experiencing, where I can just go balls to the wall in the gym and be like, you know, fuck you, I'm going to do this. And it, you know, this is going to fix itself. I'm not paying any more attention to this. This is, like, something that doesn't affect me physically. Like, how do I challenge that? You know, like, so I guess I'm struggling in that way.
Well, you're spot on, in terms of the lines kind of get blurred, because it does absolutely on the outside sort of seem like there are 20 or probably even more different ways to deal with persistent symptoms. And so over the years, I've had these different experts on, whether they're psychotherapists or medical doctors or whatever. And because I've read something that they've written or a book or watched a video where they spoke or something like that. And they talk about this approach as if it's quite a bit different than everything else that I've read. And then when I get in and I interview them and they sort of tell me what this process is or what their belief is or what people can do, I start to find that like 90 to 95% of what all the experts in the space do is the same. And there might be a little bit of nuance that might separate them, but you're spot on. It is all the same. And to me, really the best approach is what is it that you can stick with? It's like the right workout approach is whatever one it is that you stick with. And really the kind of like that's like the, as Nicole would say, like the capital T truth. But why do you think journaling didn't work for you? What was it about it? Because I could tell you why it didn't work for me or why I don't think it worked for me. What was it about for you that you think it didn't work?
I feel like journaling can work for many people who don't necessarily know the beast that they're up against. So the repressed, the true repressed emotion, and I'm not going to deny that I probably still have things that are repressed I just don't know about. But the bulk of what I'm up against here is, you know, a lot of the capital T trauma from my childhood and my teenage years. And like, I know about all of that. So just writing it down and reliving it, it made me an angry person. Like whatever I write down or whatever I speak, that's like the inner dialogue I'm feeding to myself. Yep. And my brain is just chomping it right up. And so it's spitting it back out or keeping it on loop and then, you know, regurgitating it constantly of like, oh, fuck. Like, I don't want to be a mom anymore. Oh, I hate this stupid business. Like, why did we have to do this? Or, oh, I hate. And then it feels like it makes me a really ungrateful person. And it's like, I don't want to be that.
Yeah, it sounds like Dan Buglio, I don't know if you've watched any of his videos or seen his content or anything, but that's exactly in line with the stuff that he talks about and why he's not a proponent of the journaling thing, just because he said it's just rehashing the same awful stories and reliving all this bad stuff over and over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of agree, because I would get down. I mean, I love writing. It's truly one of my passions. But when I would sit down and try and do this, it would be like I'm now telling a story almost like in third person. I'm not feeling anything. I'm not getting any substance out of it. It's just me telling the story. And I could sit there at my desk all day and blow an entire day's of work by just thinking about old stories. Right. And that's not really helping. And to me, I think that almost maybe one of the real values that journaling can have for a lot of people is if they feel like somatically they can't, because, and this is from the Jim Prusak school, but symptoms are feelings. That's what they are. So your burning mouth is a feeling of something. It's not a symptom. Mm-hmm. It's a feeling. And so taking that into account, I think that for some people, they have such a difficult time getting to like understanding that a symptom is a feeling and they can't quite connect it somatically. And so the way to get there as a vessel is oftentimes telling the story, because it will drum up the symptom, which will drum up the feeling. But for other people, like, that road is too far. There's too much to cross. And that sounds like what it is with you. Have you, for anything that has happened in your life, either that you've done or been a part of, like, do you think that you talked about forgiving your dad? Have you forgiven yourself?
See, and there again, like, I feel like I have, but a problem that I have with, and this is like, of course, I'm learning like so many TMSers is just part of the personality trait, but like your mind and my mind, like I'm a very deep person. I'm constantly thinking of like the why and how and where, and it's constantly like I'm just digging and digging and digging and trying to find, like, my mind craves more. I want to know more. I want to, you know, experience more. So I think when I try to unpack something, I'm never 100% on board with for 5 minutes, I'll be like, oh yes, that's what it is. And for so long, I went through this experience, like, okay, where is my moment of enlightenment that all these people are talking about? And I would keep just trying to find that moment. Like, I was working for that, if that makes sense. And it never happened. But I never feel like I feel like my mind is just always so open that I never feel one way or the other about a lot of things that are just, you know, kind of in the middle. Yeah. I can't, like, somebody, I could sit and have, and I love conversing with people, and I could sit and have a completely opposite opinion of them, but sit down and respectfully have a conversation. My ears are open towards them, and I want to hear what they have to say respectfully, and I'll absorb that, and I'll be like, wow, you know, if that changes my mind, I'm all for it. You know, I'm there. But I think that that is where a problem with people who have TMS come into play is our minds are always looking for more, more, more. That's when it latches on to that symptom, and you're constantly digging like more, 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 like, what is it? Where is it? Yeah. Why, you know, type thing. And it's like, sometimes I feel like I overly think about it, and that's what's making it stick around.
You know, one place that I would, and I would say really think about this after we hang up and in the next several hours and days, that I think would be really worth it to think about for you is, if this burning mouth sticks around forever, are you okay with it? You don't have to answer the question now, but Can you live with it? Are you okay with it? And I would say with almost certainty that there's a huge part of you that is, that answer is no. And really the kind of the fast track, you'd say like this moment of enlightenment. I think it could be that. I think people could have like a moment of enlightenment. But if anything, I think that that moment of enlightenment or perceived enlightenment is really just more, I'm okay with it. Whatever happens, I'm okay with it. And the biggest breakthrough in my personal life had nothing to do with TMS. And I've told the story a bazillion times, but it's the getting over the fear of flying that really did it for me, where I accepted that if a plane goes down and I die, then that's how it is, and I'll deal with it. It's just the way the world's going to turn. And And once I actually could admit that to myself and really like believe it, my fear of flying ceased to exist. My heart rate never rose again, and my palms never got sweaty again, and I never was afraid again of flying in an airplane, regardless of how small it was or how much turmoil there was, or sorry, not turmoil. Turbulence. regardless of how much of that stuff that there was, I just never had a reaction to it ever again. And it was literally like the snap of a finger. And so the enlightenment, I think, is really honestly just getting to a place of saying, if this sticks around forever, or this is the end of me, or whatever, that I'm okay with it, and it's just fine, and it is what it is. I really think that that's the secret sauce when it comes to this. And so that's getting to the place of indifference that I always speak about, and that's been most powerful for me, is just knowing that like, I'll probably wake up tomorrow and the symptom will be gone. And if it's not, maybe it'll be gone the next day or whatever, but it'll all be fine. And I still have moments throughout the week or the days or the months or even during the day where I'll get my symptom back, like my thing, which is like mid, like really severe mid back pain. It's not really severe anymore, but sometimes it'll come and it'll just stay there for an hour or whatever, or 10 minutes. And I just say to myself like, hey, this could be around at the end of the day or the end of the week or the end of the month or whatever. And if it is, it's fine. And it is what it is. And it goes away very quickly after that. So really it's like a knock on, again, it's a knock on your back or on your shoulders, Trish, that's just saying like, hey, you're not paying attention to something. You're not listening to something. You're not okay with something, really, is kind of the main thing. And that you don't have to go and ruffle through all of your past or dig up your past or anything like that, because you've done those kind of things. It sounds like you've reconciled that, but you're not okay with something. And that something could just be the symptom, and that could be it.
Okay. Yeah, I can definitely see that. Something I guess that I've thought about as well is people like with fitness and like bodybuilding or any sort of way that we, I guess, lack of a better term, kind of like chop and screw our bodies to meet our standards. Like we are forcing our bodies into submission in many ways. And I think sometimes that is why, like, this is something I cannot control, because eventually when I did, you know, get older, I did lose quite a bit of weight, and I did finally, you know, attain the beauty standard that I wanted to have. But then you kind of have that undercurrent of, I hate, you know, like I hate the fact that I have to feel like I need to look a certain way for me to be accepted within society.
Yep.
So that definitely is, I think, a lot of repressed rage for women especially not that men don't deal with it as well, but just being women and mothers in particular, because our bodies go through so many changes with childbirth and everything like that. So I feel like this, I'm trying to force my body into submission by getting rid of this, but I can't. So I think, yeah, like and that's something I know, like in my heart, I know the acceptance piece is what I need to work on. And like, I guess my question to you, Eddie, is how do I do that? How do I accept it? it's like, that's, I just can't connect the dots, and it frustrates me. Like in my brain, I can't figure out how to accept it.
Yeah. I think it's in the I mean, you're totally spot on with, we're going at kind of a micro level, but, the part about the exercise and the working out, I think that for like, my opinion is that for most people, 3 to 4 days a week is just fine for training or lifting or exercising. And in fact, any time that my current fitness or exercise goals revolves around anything of vanity and not performance, that's when my results really start to plummet. And then I get, you know, I tack on another day of training or another half hour of training or whatever. My performance dips. It goes backwards. It doesn't get any better whenever it's about anything that's aesthetically there. So if it's not about performance and giving myself gratification, that's when I see results really removed. And I think that the reason for that is that me trying to chase something that really is going to be infinite, which is vanity or the way that I look or the way, you know, that kind of thing, which you had said, like there are some body issues or some body stuff as a teenager. So I know that's there because I had the same thing. So when I, you know, when I get into that frame of mind of wanting to look a certain way or losing a certain amount of weight or whatever, that's when my results really tank and stop. And I think it's because it comes from a place of fear as opposed to this place of love, which is really performance. So if you're doing something out of performance and you want to get better, you're going to get better. Like I went on this motorcycle expedition back in August, and I'm only telling you this because you come from the same school of thought.
Yeah.
And any time that I did anything, because this was like a 500 mile off-road expedition, which the most challenging thing I've ever done on a bike. And I walked away with, I dropped my motorcycle 13 times. I broke the turn signals on it. I left with a concussion, right? So like I really went through the ringer, like on this one trip, and most of the bad stuff happened within about a 6 hour period. And, but any sort of a maneuver or anything like that I would try, if it was based out of fear, like meaning I'm going to take this route or I'm going to take this line because this other one is going to be so much worse and it could get me hurt and whatever, I inevitably ended up on the ground versus, hey, I really want to take this line or take this route because I love doing this. I always stayed upright. And so that's kind of like it's like, to me, I see it as very much like as a metaphor for any sort of a hobby or something that you enjoy, because you can really, I mean, you can turn things that you don't enjoy. You just described it. You can take things that you really enjoy and they can become things that you almost don't enjoy because you're doing it out of a place of fear from something that happened, you know, 15 years ago is what you're talking about. I don't know how we got so far. You had asked, I don't know how we
this
got
this is
there.
What it's like talking to me. This is like very, this is how it is in my brain all day. It's like, really?
you know, and I said in the very beginning that a lot of this exercise will be about awareness. And so something that I think would also be really beneficial for you is it's tough when if your brain is spinning and is kind of always on and you're always having this internal conversation about different things and various things, to me, like you just, that kind of makes you sound a little wound up, you know, for lack of a better term or whatever. And a good way just to really kind of ground yourself throughout the day is it's honestly just like something as simple as like nasal breathing. And it doesn't be anything crazy, like just throughout the day, you're on a walk, you're talking to your kids, whatever. And you're breathing through your nose because you have to pay it. Now you can't pay attention to the conversation and the two Trishes that are on the hamster wheel in your head that are spinning back and forth, telling these stories over and over again. It's just the act of slowing down and just doing little things like that throughout the day can really help balance you out and just chill that conversation and that constant. I mean, I'm imagining like not necessarily the angel on one shoulder and the devil on the other, but there is an internal argument that's going on constantly with you. And and the distraction is what's going on in your mouth. Like that's to distract you from thinking about it, or to distract you from really just having some awareness, or some a little bit more somatically centered intrinsic feeling, which is what something just as simple as grounding yourself a few times a day can pay some really big dividends.
Sure. Thank you for the reminder. I'm teaching all this stuff to my kids, because I think it's so important to for them to have this toolkit, because so many of us did not when we were growing up. Yeah. We did not grow up in an age where, you know, you were into your feelings. At least I didn't, you know, for sure, in my household. And so, like, do you do volcano breath with your kid? Have you ever done that one?
I haven't, no.
With either of your
kids? I haven't heard of that.
I do this with my kids all the time. And I just need to remember, I guess, maybe to do more like throughout the day with me. But like, you breathe in and you raise both of your hands like you're raising a volcano. And then when you blow out, you like explode your hands and go.
Yeah.
And you just like, you keep doing that. My kids love that. So like anytime they're feeling upset about things, you know, we'll do a couple of volcano breaths together. But I guess something that I kind of lost along the way too was yoga. Like I got more into, like, I was feeling very angry about the symptoms I was having. And I'm just like, well, screw it. I'm just going to lift. And I'm just going to, you know, cause it feels like you're almost fighting back against it. So like maybe to incorporate like a little more yoga, like, I don't know, something I wanted to, like, when I came on here, I wanted to tell people to, like, I am doing like eons better than I was when this all started.
Yeah.
Through the work and the learning about all of this mostly. And so like when this all started, I got so depressed. I was like, what the hell, you know, I was walking around and I told myself like, you are just a shell of a person. And I'm super uppity and like, you know, I'm just super happy person usually, but I'm like, you know what, if you don't feel like living for you anymore, just live for your kids. And if you have to walk around like this for the rest of your life, like that's just what it's going to be. And so I just want to tell people, like anybody who's listening, like you might be at that point in your life where you feel like this is never going to get better and that you're at the end of the road and that like life cannot get better. But I am telling you, like, I am getting a lot better and life is just 10 times sweeter right now. And I could have never have imagined being where I am now 6 months ago. So yes, it is taking longer for me. Like my children, you know, one of them just walk one day, he skipped crawling, but the majority of the other three, like, you have to learn to crawl before you can walk. And that is definitely the bulk of this PMS journey is, you are going to have to learn to crawl before you can walk. And sometimes that crawl is just painful and it sucks ass, but you can get there and you will get there, and I'm getting there and I'm confident I am. But, so I guess that's my piece.
Yeah, I think progress measurement's tough too, because if you and I, let's say that you and I were DMing each other on Monday, and I were to ask you every couple of days, or I guess it's only Tuesday now, or let's say I asked you like 2 days ago, how different do you feel than you did 2 days ago? And you'd probably say pretty much the same. But if I asked you, how do you feel compared to 6 months ago? And you had just said radically different. And I think that that's something to keep in mind too, is that in six more months, you are probably going to feel radically different for the better. Because it's just, there's like a marinating process, right? So your search for the right knowledge and the right methods and the right exercises and tools, meaning TMS exercises and tools, to do all this kind of stuff. Like, you found all of that. There's no more digging, no more searching that you have to do. Like, everything is right there. You're sort of like ruffling the feathers. Hannah Studley, who has been on the podcast before, she compares it to like shaking a snow globe, right? Everything's settled and it's cool. And then when you go digging and you're doing too much, it's like you're shaking the snow globe and now it's chaos in the globe. And that chaos for a lot of people is the symptom. So I'm here to tell you that there's nothing else that you need to do or that you should do. People can shit all over themselves and you don't need to do any more of that. So it's really just being present, utilizing some awareness techniques like we had talked about, making sure that you have forgiven yourself for anything that has gone on in the past that you've done in the past. And you're going to get there. And I mean, I can hear it in your voice. When you had first messaged me, I hate to see anybody that is in pain or having, because I didn't know really anything about your story. I hate seeing anybody.
Yeah, I
that,
didn't
that,
tell you any specifics. You were like,
which is good. You never know, right? You could have come on here and said that you can't get out of bed or you can't get out of a chair. I think you're doing marvelously. I admire everything that you've said about your story, and thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And I hope this was not triggering for people. I hope it was more on the helpful side of things, but just to know there are other people out there that are still on this journey, and like, it's worth it, you know?
Yeah. Trish, thanks again. Take care of yourself.
Thank you. Okay. You as well. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye.
All right. Bye.